If you've listened to this show for any length of time, you know I'm a huge proponent of being your own health advocate, of taking full responsibility and ownership of your health. As one of my former guests, Dr. Ken View, put it, you are your own best medicine. I frequently rail against the common narrative of aging, that we naturally lose muscle and mobility as we age, that aches and pains come with the territory, that we can't be strong, vital, and capable humans as we age. But I have a confession to make. I never once considered this philosophy when it came to my eyesight. Somewhere in my 40s, I went from having 20/20 vision to having a hard time reading the menu in dimly lit restaurants, to having to hold my paperbacks and iPhone just a little further away to read. And when I went to the optometrist in the mall, they did an eye exam and they said, yep, it's time for glasses. And when I questioned them about what happened, why I lived my entire life without glasses and now all of a sudden they were required, they sagely informed me that that's just what happens. It's a normal part of growing older. And they wrote me a prescription for my first pair of progressive lenses. And these weren't cheap either. And by the time I got talked into sticking these progressive lenses into some fancy designer frames, I was out several hundred bucks. Fast forward to a year or two later, and guess what? My vision got worse. So I got a new prescription and a new pair of glasses. And that's been my reality for the last 15 years or so. But here's the thing. I never questioned it. It never dawned on me that my vision, really that everyone's vision, just naturally got worse as we age. Until now. Today's guest might just turn everything you know or thought you knew about eyesight and aging upside down. Hello and welcome to the Over 50 Health and Wellness Podcast. I'm your host, Kevin English. I'm a certified personal trainer and nutrition coach, and my mission is to help you get into the best shape of your life, regardless of your age, so that you can show up in life as the healthiest, strongest, most vital version of yourself. I want to let you know that all month long in October, I have open enrollment for my Holiday Accountability Program. This is a program that runs from November 1st to December 31st and is designed to help keep you on track through the holiday season to ensure you meet your nutrition and exercise goals. Whether your goals are to simply not pack on those excess holiday pounds or you're trying to lose weight or get stronger, it's free to join and all you need to do to enroll is send me an email at coach@silveredgefitness.com stating that you want in. You can check out all the details to see what's included over at silveredgefitness.com/holiday or listen to my podcast titled Coach's Corner. Now is the time to put a holiday strategy in place. And I published that a couple weeks ago. I hope to see you in there. Now, let's get on with today's show. My guest this week is Jake Steiner. Jake is a bit of a maverick, living quasi-off-grid and semi-retired, and he's the creator of EndMyopia.com, where he helps people reduce or even end their dependence on corrective lenses. Jake was diagnosed with a -5 diopter nearsightedness as a child, which is pretty bad. And through his intellectual curiosity, critical thinking, and a good bit of trial and error, he corrected his vision back to 20/20 without the use of corrective lenses. This was a very fun and very thought-provoking conversation and really got me questioning my own beliefs. If you or a loved one has poor vision, wears glasses, or like me, just assume that your eyesight starts going bad somewhere around midlife, you don't want to miss this episode. I started our conversation by asking Jake to define myopia.
It's short-sightedness or nearsightedness, depending on where you live. It's basically you need to wear glasses to see clearly at a distance.
Talk a little bit about that, because I think not everybody's going to be familiar with short-sightedness versus farsightedness.
What are the differences? And talk to us about why you're talking about one and not the other.
Sure. So nearsightedness mostly starts in your youth, teenage years, if we're talking to us, not at all older guys, earlier now. So anybody who's kids, this starts earlier, squinting it for seeing at a distance. Farsightedness or hyperopia is something that's much more uncommon in young people. All babies are farsighted, actually, but past that, not that common. But then there's something called presbyopia that starts in your 40s, or your optometrists at least start suggesting to be selling you glasses for reading up close.
Yeah. And if you're obviously our audience doesn't see me, but I am wearing my glasses now at about age 40. You're exactly right. My arms weren't long enough to read the menu in a dimly lit restaurant at night. And so my doctor said, well, of course, that's just what happens. That's a natural part of aging. And of course, the glasses were prescribed. And every year or so, I go in for a checkup. And maybe every other year, says, well, you know, that prescription's changed slightly. And so I'm moving to another very expensive pair of glasses. And that just seems to be the inevitable way of things here. So,
to totally mess up your flow here for a second. I've been a stock trader and investor. That's my real day job. I used to be before I sort of retired. And I have a nice chunk of my portfolio is lens manufacturers and the related industries, exactly because of this. They are awesome at selling. And they sell with this, it's a prescription thing, and oops, it changed, and oops, this is how much it costs. The things you're wearing, they're like anywhere between $2 and $3 wholesale cost to the dude. So they're doing a great job.
Yeah, that's nowhere near what I paid for them. Of course, by the time you wrap them in their designer frames, those very expensive bifocal graduated lenses, and now in a fancy frame, are ridiculously expensive. And of course, my insurance pays like 5% of that or something ridiculous. So yeah, I want to put a pin in that because I want to come back to that industry as a kind of a money-making machine. But for a minute, let's stick with myopia here. So myopia is that nearsightedness where things are blurry far away. It starts early in life, and we see this very commonly as probably kids squinting at the chalkboard in school, things like that. What causes myopia?
So It's actually, that's an interesting question. And I recommend people, by the way, this has implications to your main topic of this whole, as we age, how do we maintain and improve performance? So for anybody who's not that fascinated up front, I promise eyesight is a super important topic to the whole aging process. But as to where this whole starts out is, I recommend scholar.google.com. For anybody who's not familiar, it's Google search, but only for clinical science and studies. So anytime you hear a crazy person on the internet telling you that what you think is a normal industry, a normal condition, tells you some alternate story, I always go to scholar.google.com, look up if there's science supporting this stuff, right? So starting there, short version, I'll keep this super short, pseudomyopia, P-S-E-U-D-O, myopia. If you type that into scholar.google.com, tens of thousands of search results. And basically, they explain that the start of you wearing glasses is a muscle spasm. It's something called the ciliary muscle or focusing muscle. Your eyeball is a ball and the front is a lens that's shaped, but it's a really cool circular muscle. The closer you look at something, the tighter that muscle gets to shape the lens. So the light focuses in the proper spot in the back of the eye on the retina. And that's how it normally works. What it's not designed for is for us to be staring at a close-up object for hours and hours and hours. So that muscle stays tight where it's not really meant to do that many hours every day. So eventually you get a muscle spasm. Pseudomyopia is a muscle spasm. Your early myopia, the first time you went to the optometrist, odds are you had a muscle spasm. There was no mysterious genetic illness. And by the way, two separate categories. There's what I call retail optometry, the people that sell you glasses. And then there's academia, the people that write in these peer-reviewed science journals that tell a completely different story. So I'm not a doctor, obviously, I'm not a professional. I'm pointing you just in the direction of people selling you glasses also are withholding peer-reviewed clinical science that clearly shows the cause. So muscle spasm. And then the second half of the equation is, if you look up the term lens-induced myopia, scholar.google.com, brilliant for that. Again, tens of thousands of results. of studies, all peer-reviewed studies showing that the glasses that you wear cause your eyesight to get worse. Specifically, the lens wear, the minus lens wear, causes more myopia. And the reason I was laughing earlier, and the reason whenever you go to the optometrist, you are getting the story of whoopsie poo, your prescription has changed, you need stronger glasses, because as expected, the lenses are doing part of the side effect of giving you instant fix of the vision is over time, your eyesight gets worse. And I can explain that if you like, but that's kind of the short origin story of your bad eyesight.
Okay. So yeah, I would like you to go into a little bit more detail on that. But before we do that, if I go to this retail optometrist and that's 100% of where that's all my exposure to this, right? So if we go to this retail glasses place and they're the ones that are testing my vision, when they diagnose me with myopia, what are they going to tell me the cause is?
Oh, try it out. Jeez, I recommend that. because pseudomyopia and lens
I think it might be different than what you just explained.
Oh yeah, it's going to be, it's genetic. We don't know.
Right.
And that's what it's going to be.
Yeah. And as I just did a quick Google search, if you just Google search myopia, that's what comes up. It's we don't know what the cause is. It's just genetic and you just have it. And that's really all the detail that's in there. But what I heard you saying is that it's more of a behavior induced thing, right? That as we're, I think you said, looking at things up close and concentrating that, maybe the eye and the human body hasn't evolved to do that, where today there's a lot of that. We're required as children, we were heads down in textbooks, and now it's even worse probably with heads down in electronic devices. Is that what's actually causing these little muscle spasms that's leading us to be diagnosed with myopia?
100%. Absolutely. And it really is. I feel weird sitting here telling the story because I'm not a conspiracy-minded person. I trust the mainstream. My parents are both doctors, right? Like, I'm not the guy who goes digging for unlikely answers to common issues. I had very strong myopia. We'll get into that another point. But it really is the kind of thing. That's why I highly recommend Google Scholar to just show you clinical science. It's exactly what happens. That muscle, if you stare, even if you have like a 4-hour Netflix binge on your iPad, and then you look up at like small text, it's going to be blurrier than it was before because that muscle is stuck. And in glasses were invented in about the 16th century, and they were invented because there were only one group of people who were nearsighted, and they were monks, right? Monks were the only ones who knew how to read and write, and they spent lots of time in front of candlelight writing, and they got myopia. And that's where glasses originally came from.
That's fascinating. Okay. So fast forward to today, and it's very common that people wear glasses, but if I go in and I'm diagnosed with myopia, I'm going to get a prescription, but over time it's going to get worse. And the reason for that isn't that it's so much my vision's degenerating. It's that the lenses are not actually, they're certainly not correcting anything, right? And I think maybe what you're saying is it's exacerbating the problem.
Yeah. And I'll just have to throw this in here because it always pushes my buttons. The prescription, reading glasses you can buy over the counter. They're the same thing conceptually as glasses for distance vision. Millions of dollars were spent in lobbying to make that a prescription. It's a lot less dangerous than buying over the counter pain medicine. It's a clear curved piece of plastic. The way they get these huge profit margins is they call it a prescription, and then you feel like, oh, that must be a thing. I'm just throwing that in there because I dislike the term. I call them subscriptions because, right?
But yeah, that's probably a very interesting point there. I hadn't thought about that. But yeah, you're right. When I go to the doctor, I get a prescription for my glasses.
They're usually in a shopping mall. I mean, you know, what else, what other kind of so-called, what they refer to as medical care do you get in a shopping mall? It really is a bit of a racket. So what causes your eyesight to get worse? The short version is your eyes are a fluid-filled ball. And it's never perfect, right? It's not like a glass ball. The membrane, the skin around it is kind of movable. So there's a mechanism built into the eye to keep its round shape. Lens in the front, retina where the light signal hits and is processed is in the back, and it's filled with fluid, right? So the ball has to be an exact length from the lens in the front to the retina in the back for the light to focus correctly. Mechanism in there that is based on how the light hits the retina makes the eye longer and shorter, right? And it continuously adjusts this process since you're born. When you're born, you're hyperopic, you're farsighted, and then the eyeball adjusts in length, and this continues until you die. Hyperopic defocus, if you want to dig into that on Google Scholar, is part of the mechanism that drives this. What happens is basically the retina has checks that the light focuses exactly on the retina. And if the eyeball is elongated, or if the light focuses slightly behind the retina, which is what happens when you wear glasses for distance vision, the eyeball goes, I'm too short, and it elongates. So it's a direct response to you wearing glasses, and some of the light, not all of the light, but a little bit of light reflects behind the retina or would focus behind the retina, causing the eye to elongate. So lens-induced myopia. Eyeball, you put lenses in front of it. There's actually just a muscle spasm. There was nothing wrong with the eye itself. The lens refocuses the light to give you proper distance vision, but the side effect is the eyeball starts to elongate and will continuously elongate to sometimes significant degrees. So every year that you go back, you need stronger and stronger and stronger glasses. The eye is perfectly healthy. The reason this happens, and there's no genetic defect, there's no illness, there's no condition. It's a healthy eye gets a signal that says, I'm too short because of the glasses, and then it gets longer and longer, which in turn makes your vision worse and worse.
Lens-induced myopia. Okay, so folks, I'll drop all of this into the show notes for this episode that folks can go out and research this on their own, as well as we'll talk about nmyopia.org, where there's a ton of this information there as well. So, Jake, let's transition here a little bit. I want to talk about your personal story, because that's how I first learned about you, is in your personal story. So you overcame this, and I'm very interested to hear your story, your personal story, and your transformation and your journey on how you overcame myopia yourself. Because I saw a picture of you. You were a kid in these glasses, right? So
God, we'll put that online.
Yeah, yeah, right. Where'd that come from?
It's terrible. So this started for me in a time before the internet was what it is today. So there wasn't this big general available movement on health, right? Like that, it just didn't really exist. Like it's, you know, your audience base is, we are the people who lived, got information from libraries, right? Yeah. Like that's the time. I had low arches in my feet, and I had those shoe inserts when I was a kid. And then eventually, for whatever reason, not because of the internet, because there wasn't any, I figured out barefoot walking really sorts out my feet. So I got into making shoes, and not that I'm a giant hippie, but that was like one little crack in the facade where I was like, oh, actually my feet work great. And I had lower back pain, and I started sleeping on Japanese style on harder surfaces, got rid of my back pain. Little things. I had thyroid problems, significant thyroid problems over time. I had a blood test, figured out what happened there. So I kind of already had a slight routine of going, symptom treatment doesn't always work for me, right? Plus the background, I'm an analyst. Like my job is figuring out what stocks make money, what businesses make money. And there's always a lot of stories that people like to tell. The bullshit meter is part of my job, basically. So yeah. I was all the way up to -5 diopters, started maybe when I was 12 or so, early 20s. I went to some optometrist. That was the first time I went on my own as an adult, close to -5.
Let me just interrupt you right there, because I'm not sure everybody understands what -5 diopter is. That's obviously a diagnosis of your sight. Yeah. I don't think we have a reference. Most of us probably don't have a reference for what that means. Is that really bad? Is that marginally bad? Or is that just a little bad?
It's bad enough that we can't find your glasses without your glasses.
So that's significant in sight impairment then. Okay.
Yeah. And actually, I can give you the exact reference for this, which is interesting. Whenever people look at the so-called prescription and they see diopters, they don't know what it means, right?
Right.
-2 diopters is you take 100 and divide it by the number of diopters, you get the distance, and vice versa. So if you have -2 diopters, you can see 50 centimeters before there's blur. Do you understand? Like the formula is diopters equals a distance of how far you can see clearly. If I can see from my eye, measuring from my eyeball to a book, and the book is at 50 centimeter distance from me, and things start to get blurry, I would need minus two diopters to see clearly to infinity. So minus five is more than twice that. I'm very nearsighted. It was no fun. My glasses were thick, and it makes your eyes smaller. So I had these tiny little eyes behind glasses. It was just not cool for a single guy. And I went to the optometrist, and they said, you need stronger glasses. And that was the first time I was just as an adult in there. And my question was, well, why? Like, what happened? And I remember the guy saying, it's genetic. And like, I'm not a geneticist, but I'm like, that is an unlikely answer. So we are having and again, because I'm an analyst, like this is my job. Like when I hear unlikely answers immediately, I'm like, how does that make sense? Right? Like 50 years ago, not everybody wore glasses. My parents don't wear glasses. My grandparents don't wear glasses. How did my genetics suddenly get bad? You know, now again, like how does this all work? And it's unlikely that we globally have this really specific genetic defect that's just becoming spreading like wildfire. But there was no answer to that. So I went to the library and I found basically the stuff that we discussed earlier. And I was fairly shocked because I didn't expect there to be, this is all in optometry and ophthalmology journals, clearly saying focusing muscle spasm, whenever you got glasses, your eyesight got worse. And that's why eyesight is bad today. So that's where my personal story started, where I lost faith in the people that are giving me this treatment. And I found this huge glaring hole of, wait a minute, the reason I was wearing these things all my life is because a muscle spasm wasn't diagnosed correctly.
Yeah. And you had said something earlier there that I think is fascinating. You called it symptom treatment. And certainly I can see that that's exactly what's happening. These optometrists are treating symptoms and clearly not causes. And we see that a lot in modern medicine, right? If you're obese and you're pre-diabetic, very often the prescription isn't, well, hey, let's get you on a healthy whole foods diet and get you doing some vigorous strength training. It's here's some medicine, right? Same with all these lifestyle diseases. We are very good at treating symptoms because it's quick and it's easy, and there's a lot of money to be made there as well, similar to your case. Big pharma is just cleaning up on people that are metabolically unhealthy from lifestyle diseases. But yeah, we're really good at treating symptoms. So you've started doing this research yourself, and you're finding these academic journals, and you're reading that, okay, wait, these academic journals are saying something different from my optometrist. They're telling me that there are these spasms that are caused by these very specific behaviors I'm doing. So talk to us, where do you go from there? How do you get from having really bad vision, this minus five diopter vision, to where you are today? You are not wearing your glasses here today.
Yeah, I don't actually own.
And I think I think you say you're 20/20 vision, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah.
It took me probably really to fully be to the point where I don't own any more glasses. I used to have some in my motorbike, like just really low diopter night riding in the city type stuff. It took me close to probably like 10 years to figure it out, because I bought all the books first. I did the Bates method thing. I was traveling a lot. I was in Nepal. I got eye acupuncture. I tried all this stuff because I figured somebody figured this out. Like, I'm clearly not the dude to figure this out, right? Like realistically, but none of that stuff worked, which was kind of sad and frustrating, because I spent a lot of time on it. And then I went back to, okay, so let's look at the problem, right? Like the problem is the eyeball is perfectly healthy, and the eyeball has been told by the lenses that it's too short, so it elongated. So my theory, which to this day, this is highly experimental stuff. Like nobody says you should go do this. Retail optometry certainly doesn't agree. I don't even say, you know what I mean? It's an experiment. My theory was, if I wear lower diopter glasses, a slight reduction, and I didn't do that very well in the beginning, the light will focus in front of the retina instead of behind it, and it'll give it the signal to shorten. And there is science, there's interesting experiments ranging from fish to birds to monkeys to including humans, showing that the eyeball adjusts in length in both directions. So it doesn't just elongate, it also shortens, and measurably and relatively quickly. So I bought lower diopter glasses, and I started wearing those. And I didn't know what I was doing at the time. I made a far too big of a reduction. It was a terrible experience. I remember I threw away my old glass, minus five, I bought minus threes. And I threw away the minus five. Somehow I persevered because I'm bullheaded that way. And eventually, I remember one day I was in the subway. I could read the signs on the other side sitting in the subway car. And I was really fascinated that, I almost forgot about this. I just let myself have this crappy vision. And apparently, my vision did improve to that point. And that started off this sort of experimental thing with friends and then larger groups to this big community that it is today.
Okay. So you do have a big community today. And I wanted to back up because you said you tried eye acupuncture. So talk to us about some other things that are out there. Because, you know, in researching this, I did come across that there are people that will say, well, if you exercise your eyeballs every day by doing these kind of weird, look far away, look close and focusing. So there's a camp that's trying to get you, I guess, to do exercises for your eyes. There's obviously eye acupuncture. Did not know that was a thing. So talk to us a little bit about some of the other things that are out there that are being thrown around in the space.
Yeah. So the big one is Bates method. And there was a dude, Dr. William Bates, 100 years ago, an optometrist who said what I'm saying. Like, wait a minute, this is a strain symptom. And that was before everybody having to go to school and spending lots of time in front of books, that's where it starts, right? And today, much worse, where parents don't ever do this, parents give the kids iPads as babysitters, that will immediately cause problems, or not immediately, but very quickly. So 100 years ago, this was kind of a problem of the few and fancy, right? Like who could read and had educations. And he said, it's a strain issue. So that's Dr. William Bates pioneered this idea. If optometry would have gone in this direction, then today we would have no myopia and no $100 billion industry. What remains of William Bates is this eye exercise community that is clinging on to this idea that he pioneered that made sense, that is strain reducing exercises. It won't do anything if you're wearing minus five diopter glasses. It won't do anything if you have a raging screen addiction. It won't work in today's age, but it was the right idea as a starting point 100 years ago. Then there's eye vitamins, which people love to buy just because it sounds like it'll help. Eye yoga, crazy stuff.
Eye yoga.
Problem with all of
another
these
good
things,
one. Yeah.
Yeah. The problem with all of these things is my question is always, how does this address the cause? Whenever you're suggesting a treatment to anything, I'm like, explain to me the cause and explain to me how the treatment addresses the cause. And it doesn't, or it doesn't effectively. So unfortunately, those things, while some of them are good ideas, I don't recommend the eye acupuncture. They're not really effective because they don't address close-up is your problem and the glasses you're wearing are the problem.
Okay. So we've talked about close-up is the problem. What are conditions that we should avoid? What are some things we should, on the flip side of that, is what are some things we should do in order to kind of improve our vision as we move forward?
So I spent so many years just explaining and researching and improving the way to reverse your myopia. That's been my topic, just the mechanics, which is pretty easy to do. Spoiler alert, you buy low diopter glasses and you wear them every 3 to 4 months, you can reduce your glasses. Simple. What I've been finding, though, is a lot of people have a problem that's beyond that, which is a big part of why you're stuck behind the glasses is because your life has become this cycle of content consumption and passively sitting in a space staring at screens. You have to for work anyway, but now you go to a restaurant, all your friends are playing their phone. Now you go to the gym, everybody's playing on their phone. It's a powerful addiction, the phone thing, and you're being triggered in this addiction by everybody in your environment playing on their phone. It's a really hard to avoid thing. Problem with the phone is it's a small screen, so the point of immersion for a small device is fairly close. So you're going to hold it fairly close to your face relative to an iPad or a laptop. The closer you hold it, the tighter the muscle, the more the muscle strain, the more the myopic effect. So especially since lockdowns and stuff, you get a lot more people that go to the optometrist, need strong glasses. Short version is phone's a bad idea because it's a small screen device. I always recommend content consumption for one. It's worth evaluating. Do you have interesting hobbies in your life? Are you getting outside? Are you not bringing your phone to the gym and just having an actual workout? controlling that addictive behavior of devices, number one, and number two, screen size, right? Like I still have an addiction to content consumption, but at least take it to an iPad distance or ideally a laptop distance or super ideally a TV distance where that muscle's almost completely relaxed. Makes a huge difference.
Yeah, that's something I haven't considered. So you're right. We're addicted to content. And a lot of that content today is in the form of our phones because it's with us everywhere. It's basically a supercomputer at this point. And with all of the social media and its intentional addictive properties, you're right. It's common to see couples out on date night with both of them staring at their phones, which is horrifying for a number of reasons, but also because it's not good for our eye health. And I think a lot of people might not have considered that before. There's a lot of reasons why you shouldn't stare at a phone, a lot of health reasons, as well as emotional and social reasons. But it is compelling. The toothpaste is out of the tube. We're not going back. This is our new reality. So one suggestion would be to move further away and to try and break that cycle of constantly being on that. And I think that makes a lot of sense for a lot of people. So is there anything in the lighting? For example, I think I said earlier, one of the things that got me into glasses to begin with is that dimly lit restaurant, or I couldn't quite see the fine print on the wine list in my menu, or maybe driving at night, a lot of people find that that's where they're having a problem with vision. Does lighting play into myopia, whether that's part of the cause or part of the cure?
And no, neither. But the worse the lighting, the less contrast you have, the wider open your pupils are, and different parts of the retina are activated. So you're generally going to have less amazing vision, both in less light and in narrow spectrum UV, like fluorescent light is terrible. Hmm. And you'll notice the difference if you're not living behind super strong glasses. And I'll divert just a tiny little bit here because like you're wearing glasses, for example. I think just because I've been dealing with people for the last almost going on 20 years now, I've noticed the trend of how we age. And this kind of starts with youth, but when you wear glasses, especially glasses, contact lenses less so, you have a limited field of vision. So you have no peripheral vision. You have to look at the ground when you're walking, just for example, because no peripheral vision, you can't see what's going on the ground. So you move differently than a person without glasses. Low level anxiety is fairly common and possibly potentially because you have no peripheral vision. So your visual cortex goes, something might be coming. I can't tell you because all of this stuff is not working correctly, right? So there's a super short version. There's lots more in that area, but there's effect on both your interaction with your environment, your ability and willingness to move in your environment, your social interactions. Behind glasses, your eyes are fixated on the point where the lens focuses correctly. So your eye movement is slightly unnatural and your neck movement is different, which is perceived very subtly by the people who you're communicating with as there's something a little bit weird about you. That's how lens wearers get categorized as more introverted. There's a bunch of stuff there. The point I'm getting to is this is a limiting factor in your self-expression, in your social environment, in your physical environment. The older we get, right, the more important it gets to recognize and limit the impact of those things because it's super easy. You can be, a friend of mine is 70, or almost 70. He's a kite surfer that's out 3 hours a session, right? Like the man moves like a 50-year-old. He's got perfect eyesight. And that's a hugely important part. You're not going to be 70 and be moving like that and functioning like that if not only you're wearing glasses for distance vision, but now you have these progressive lenses where your vision is good nowhere, right? Because progressive means they vary the focal plane from distance up high in the lens to close up low in the lens and kind of in between. So for one, it's a terrible signal for your visual cortex, which doesn't expect the focal plane to change as your eye moves. It's just bad for you. But also you never see clearly, right? Like the lens substitution for actual natural vision is not amazing to begin with. And you become extremely reliant on this. So now combined with age, you're just shrinking. And I'm not saying physically shrinking, but your reality is shrinking into this, it's safer if I don't move too much. Don't explore too much. Don't move out of, and you know, our world shrinks easily as we get older. And I'm not getting older, so I don't know what I'm talking about.
Yeah, right.
But I think it becomes super important that if you're not yet in presbyopia glasses, to avoid that. And we can talk about how to do that. And if you are already wearing those things, reducing your dependence on them, which you can absolutely do. I think it makes a huge difference that you can read a newspaper without glasses. You can look at your partner without glasses. You can do all these things without having to train your eyes to look through a specific part of the lens. All of this is super limiting. And I think it's relatively easy to fix. And the reward is huge, because you are not going to be aging into the shrinking box of seeing less and less.
Aging into a shrinking box of seeing less and less. And as you're describing that, I'm absorbing all of this because you're describing me. I am wearing the progressive bifocals here. And you're very right. When I first got that prescription, it was a little disorienting, because I kind of felt like I was walking downhill a little bit, because you have the different, right? And, but the body's amazing at adapting. I very quickly learned that as I look at things, I'm constantly adjusting my head to get that perfect focus on, say, you, the screen at a couple feet here, or my notes down here, which are 12 inches away. And I hadn't considered that I am viewing my world, because it's much easier to wear them all the time than take them off and on. And my world is shrinking to that focal point of what I'm looking through. Okay, so what do I do? So I'm a year or so, just pandemic and everything else. I ignored my last yearly checkup, right? And my insurance pays for an eye checkup. Of course it does. How do I go about, I have this prescription now. What would I do? What are the steps I take? Can I go to my doctor and say, okay, what's my prescription? How many diopters am I? I want one less. He's going to push back. You know, no. You want one more. I just tested you. You need more, not less. Or do I just get rid of these altogether and go buy some readers? Because that's really what I'm using them for, is kind of the up close reading. I read a lot of old fashioned paperbacks, small print. And of course, I look at my device, can't read my emails on my iPhone if I don't have my glasses on. So what's the practicality of starting to decrease dependence on glasses?
First of all, I am a big fan of eye checkups, and optometrists don't love me saying this. I say go to an ophthalmologist. That's a proper doctor, right? They have a lot more equipment. They're trained to recognize a lot more problems. If you have the choice, an ophthalmologist is going to be able to give you a much more thorough understanding of where your vision health is. Avoid shops in a mall. Avoid places that have fashion frame 2-for-1 sales. That's not where you want to get an eye health checkup. And I'm sorry, optometrists. People really get upset when I say that. But an ophthalmologist is the place to go. Ignore what they say about myopia. And again, I'm not a doctor. None of this is advice. Like, you're stepping into the deep end of your own exploration by doing any of this. There's not any big risk. Wear glasses for driving, be safe, et cetera. Don't strain yourself. Anything that you do with this, recognize that your eyes change slowly, and small tweaks is where it's at. Like, throwing those things away, for example, and then struggling to read a newspaper or recognizing friends is not the way to go. It's small adjustments. And the first part is understanding presbyopia. Presbyopia is the lens in the front of the eye. It's the flexible lens I was talking about that has that circular muscle around it. It hardens a little bit. Depending on diet, depending on factors, lots of different things, the lens is just not as flexible. The problem is, if you start wearing reading glasses, the lens doesn't have to be flexible, because the reading glasses change the focal plane instead of the lens. So the problem becomes, if you can already see where this is going, you start using the lens, you're not exercising, and you're using the glasses, you're not exercising the lens, the muscle, the movement to keep it flowing properly. And now your eyes are just not doing it, right? Where before they were still working, nothing changed. The flexibility decreases a very small amount, but you throw those reading glasses on for the first time, they don't have to work. And now it's like, oh, that's nice. But it's not nice in a good way. It's like nice, like rolling around in a wheelchair. You probably didn't need them, right? Like, the first time it was more of a question of, okay, a bunch of things you can do. Natural lighting. If you read the newspaper next to a window, you don't need any reading glasses. Maybe you need to hold it slightly further away. Maybe you need to challenge your eyes a little bit, focusing on the thing. Maybe you ideally spend more time with not tiny fonts, just not overstraining. But pretty commonly, I travel a lot, right? I spend most of my time in backwater countries, and I have this little side hobby that's just because it's funny for me, seeing how old people can see, right? Like my home is in Myanmar. Lots of old people, nobody has reading glasses. Everybody can see tiny things up close. You could argue diet, you could argue genetics, but mostly it's you don't get the reading glasses, so that lens continues to have to work is the first thing. Now, if you already have them, like in your case, my one recommendation is simplify. It's ideal to have one pair of glasses for one distance. It's much easier on your brain. It encourages natural eye movement because now you're not having to pick what part of the lens works where. You have a distance pair of glasses, you have a close-up pair of glasses, and then you make a tiny little reduction in your plus correction. Quarter diopter, right? And focus on, hey, with this quarter diopter, maybe there's not any challenge. So you wait 3, 4, 5 months, you don't do it quickly, you reduce another quarter diopter till you get to the point where reading the newspaper next to a window is fine. Doing it in bed at night in a dark room doesn't work that well. So now you're recognizing, instead of these crutches, you're recognizing, okay, this environment is not ideal for this. Maybe I'm using this to challenge my eyes, right? Like flexing the lens a little bit, it's fine. I'm not overstraining. And anywhere between 3 to 6 months, you reevaluate, do I need the amount of diopter still? Or is my eyesight better than it was 3 months ago? Maybe I can step it down a little bit more. You can't reverse presbyopia as far as I know. Like the hardening of the lens happens, but your dependence on lenses can be reduced ideally over time. Again, not overstraining, taking it easy, not doing it too quickly. It helps you recognize your limitations and work with them rather than using a progressively more complex correction to do it for you.
Thank you for that. That is excellent practical advice. And I think that folks listening to this, if you're looking at the world behind glasses, can certainly take a lot away from that in terms of just practical, what can I do today? What can I do in the next 6 months, in the next 6 years, right? So speaking of good practical advice, you've got a website, it's endmyopia.org. Talk to us a little bit about that website and what folks might find there.
It's terrifying.
It is a little terrifying, yeah. You get sucked in there.
So I've got a small group that makes me do podcasts and stuff. And they always complain about the website because I'm not looking for fame or money because I did well in the stock market and fame doesn't suit me. So the website, there's over 1200 articles. There's links to our Facebook group and a big forum and our terrible YouTube channel, all made just because I was having fun with it, or I was ranting about something, or there was some question that I've been asked 500 times and I decided to write an article explaining it. But it's not super well organized, and it's made by a dude who's neither trying to save the world nor trying to sell your thing, right? So when you arrive there, there's rants and inside jokes and all kinds of weird things. It's a bit of a project. I think it's totally worthwhile if you look at it as, okay, this is a weird one and I'm going to spend a few weeks casually immersing myself in the biology and how it works and how I can fix my stuff. But it's not a quick thing because I'm not pushing to sell a course or trying to be the next dude selling a New York Times bestselling book.
Yeah, that's very well said. And you're very clear with that as well. And as you get into the website, that's one of your first things. Hey, full disclaimer, I'm a dude on the internet. You should question everything, including me. You do your own research. So you're very upfront about that. But there is a treasure trove of information in there. You've already collected and researched and distilled a lot of this. And like you said, you've written all these different articles up there. So folks, I'll drop that also into the show notes here. So Jake, what's next for you? What's on the horizon?
One day at a time.
Just one day at a time? Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. With this, what happened this last year, right? Like who knows where to go? My home was in Myanmar, and Myanmar recently had a meltdown where the army decided they would be better at governing the people, leading to the current basically civil war that's going on over there. So it's complicated, and I'm just rolling with it
rolling with
having
it.
Having chats with you.
Yeah.
Man, that's what I mean.
Yeah. And obviously you're keeping up with the website and all of that. So that's great.
Dude, I'm telling you though, it's super worth, because now I'm only 45, so I'm nowhere near the age group that you're referring to. I am the picture of youth, but it's so worth, it doesn't matter where you start, whether it's eyes or other stuff that you talk about plenty. It is a super empowering experience, even for you, right? Like you start separating glasses. You were reading glasses. First, you curse at me because you're like, this freaking guy is making me carry around these things. Slowly, you reduce your dependence. And it's incredibly liberating to go, I am not aging. Like whenever people say, oh, my eyes are not the same they used to be, that's nonsense, right? I think there's a huge impact psychologically long-term in, as you're getting older, your eyesight is getting better and not worse, right? Like psychologically, I think that's super important to not be in that shrinking box that you don't have to be in.
That's very well said. And it's interesting because I talk on this podcast a lot about railing against that common narrative of the inevitability of aging. And look, we're all going to meet the same end. Nobody's going to defeat aging, but we can age well. We can have this healthy health span for a long, long time. And, you know, I specifically address a lot of the issues around sarcopenia, you know, that age-related muscle loss and frailty, and that we can be healthy, strong, capable, vital humans as we age. But that's not really what's being fed to us. And I never really thought about that in terms of my personal eyesight. I lump that in with what I rail against. That's just the inevitability of aging. My eyes are just getting a little worse every year, and that's just how it is. And so this was a very refreshing conversation. And I want to thank you so much for your time today. I want to thank you for coming on the show, sharing all your knowledge and your wisdom. I want to thank you for doing this work as well. Obviously, you've put a ton of time and effort in this. And to your point, you're not asking anything in return. You don't have a quick get your vision back in 20 days after you give me all this money kind of a deal going. You've got this wonderful site with all these free resources. You're out here on podcasts. So certainly I really appreciate the work you're doing and just hope that you keep up the good work.
I appreciate it. Thanks for having me on.
Okay, folks, that's our show for this week. I hope you enjoyed today's conversation as much as I did. As we wrap up today's show, I have a favor to ask you. Would you share this episode with someone who you think would enjoy hearing Jake's message? Of course, statistics tell us that only 15% of people over 55 listen to podcasts. So the easiest way to share this episode is send them a link to this show and they can listen right there on the website. The link is silveredgefitness.com/episode81. There you'll also find all the links to the resources we discussed in this episode. And you can continue the conversation over there as well. I'd love to hear your thoughts and comments on today's show. Also, I want to let you know that if you enjoyed today's show, I have more free resources over at silveredgefree.com. There you can find all my mini guides with my top tips on nutrition, exercise, lifestyle. So head over there, scroll through the guides, and download whatever you feel would be useful to you. Oh, and don't forget, please sign up for the Holiday Accountability Program. Again, it's 100% free to enroll. Just shoot me an email at coach@silveredgefitness.com saying you're in. As we wrap up our time together today, you can always show your support for this show by giving this podcast a 5-star review on whatever platform you listen to podcasts on, and be sure to subscribe and follow so you don't miss future episodes. I really appreciate you spending your time with me today, and until next time, stay strong.